Well, good morning, TNC family. From my home to wherever you are, these are strange, unusual days because the coronavirus is still in full swing. But let me say again, we're not going to let COVID-19 defeat our commitment and energy to love and serve and give and encourage and connect. And so I hope and pray that as you stay safe and well, you will also stay focused and motivated and creative and connected to our church family. And one of the ways we're staying connected is we are all together reading daily through the fifth book of the New Testament, the Acts of the Apostles. And as you know by now, Acts, written by Luke, is the sequel to his earlier biography of Jesus and picks up where his first book left off. So it's the story of the adventures of the early Jesus followers as they live out the teachings of Jesus. And if you're reading and it isn't creating all kinds of questions and conversations, then maybe you're not really reading it. Because entering this story and asking the questions the apostles are asking and facing the problems the early church is facing, it creates all kinds of questions for what you believe and how you live. Now, I want to consider with you today an idea that's launched by an episode recorded in chapter 6 and beginning in verse 1. I'll read it, and then we'll talk about it. Verse 1. As the believers rapidly multiplied, there were rumblings of discontent. Did you hear that? As the believers rapidly multiplied, there were rumblings of discontent. The Greek-speaking believers complained about the Hebrew-speaking believers, saying that their widows were being discriminated against in the daily distribution of food. And so you have a Greek-speaking ministry and a Hebrew-speaking ministry and a ministry to widows and a food distribution ministry. Verse 2, so the 12 called a meeting of all the believers, and they said, We apostles should spend our time teaching the word of God, not running a food program. And so, brothers, select 7 men who are well-respected and are full of the Spirit and wisdom. We will give them this responsibility. Then we apostles can spend our time in prayer and teaching the word. In other words, they're not ignoring their responsibility, they are just going to delegate it. Verse 5, everyone liked this idea, and they chose 7. These 7 were presented to the apostles, who prayed for them as they laid their hands on them. Now, listen one more time to verse 1. As the believers rapidly multiplied, there were rumblings of discontent. In other words, as the community of Jesus followers is successfully growing, there comes with it new distractions and challenges. And folks from all over are coming to the apostles with additional ideas and opportunities and problems and needs. Which, when you think about it, makes sense because new eras always lead to new opportunities, but also to new distractions. There's a guy named Greg McEwen, a graduate of the Stanford School of Business, who is now CEO of a leadership and business agency based in California. Tall guy, really dark hair, and he wrote a best-selling book some time ago. The book is called Essentialism, essentialism. And his research and writing is driven by these questions. Why is it that successful people and companies don't continue to be successful? Why don't, once they've reached one level of success, why don't they break through to the next level of success and contribution and difference making? And he wondered this because he was working with Silicon Valley companies and he noticed a consistent and predictable pattern, a four-phase pattern. Phase one, companies are focused on the right things at the right time in the right way for the right reasons. And they have great passion and clarity and focus around their cause. That's phase one, focus. By the way, Acts chapter 2 is pretty much all about clarity, passion, and focus. And it leads to phase 2, McEwen says, success, where there is rapid growth because they're succeeding, and they have momentum and support and excitement, and they are increasingly making a difference. And wow, they're gaining a reputation as the go-to group, the go-to people, the go-to company. And more people are coming to that company when in need. So phase one, focus, leads to phase two, success. Again, I hope you see that this is exactly what is going on in the book of Acts. And then phase two, success, leads to phase three. And phase three is options, where the focused and successful company is suddenly presented with increased options and opportunities, which makes sense, right? More people want to partner with you, learn from you, benefit from you. And so success is actually code for new demands on our time and energies. I'm telling you, this is exactly Acts chapter 2, 3, 4, and 5, where the early Jesus movement is seeing a huge influx of options and opportunities. And in the passage we just read, verse 1, as the believers rapidly multiplied, there were also rumblings of discontentment. And then in verse 2, the apostles use a word that jumps off the page. It's the 17th word of verse 2. I counted it in the New Living Translation. And the word is time. They say, look, if we're not careful with our time, we're going to get spread thinner and thinner. If we get undisciplined in our time, we will be distracted from what would otherwise be our highest level of contribution. And the effect of our success will be, it will actually undermine the very focus that led to our success in the first place. Which leads to phase four in McEwen's study. Phase four is chaos. Chaos, or misuse of our time and resources. He writes, quote, success can actually distract us from the essential things that produced success in the first place. In other words, success can be a catalyst for failure. Now, I totally get that all that information is loaded with all kinds of implications and conversations going like 1,000 different directions. But I want to focus on just one piece of this. Because I read the book, and then we all together started reading Acts. And then a few days later, I came across chapter 6. And then that word, time, just jumped off the page. Because here are the disciples with increased success, but also increased demands on their time. And so the disciples come together and say, okay, at the heart of this era we are in, at the core of all these new realities, is an essential question about how we are going to use, leverage, and spend our time. And they say, if we use it unwisely, it's going to kill us and our cause. But if we use it well, it will catapult us into days of even greater effectiveness, joy, and success. And so the apostles decide to delegate. Why? Because they understand this. They get it. They understand the invaluable, incredible use of time. Now, here's what I want this story to help us with today. In this coronavirus era, we have less of many things. The biggest things being less social interaction, less going out to eat, less little league practices, less live sports to watch, less commuting times in our cars. We have less of many things. But what that means is we have more of something else. We have more time. Well, okay, we don't have more time. We have the exact same amount of time. Still 24 hours in a day. But now most of us have a lot more discretionary time. And here's what I'm discovering as I've talked with folks from all over the country, Colorado, Nevada, Washington State, New York, Florida, Texas, Alabama, and many folks right here in our own city. Here's what I'm learning. Some people are doing so much now, and some are doing so little. And what I want to say today is your time is too valuable to waste. And what else I want to say is if we live these days, these hours, these seconds with wisdom surrounding our use of time, we will have a great story on the other side. But if we waste our time right now, we're going to end up with huge regrets. The Apostle Paul, who we're going to read a lot about in the book of Acts, he started a church in Ephesus, and he lived there for almost 3.5 years. And then later, after he moved away, he writes a letter back to the church that he loves so much. And in chapter 5, he writes these words, verse 15, "Live purposely and carefully, not as the unwise and witless, but as wise, sensible, intelligent people, making the very most of your time." So, I was thinking last week, imagine that you are standing in a line of folks getting paid. You know, getting paid money, cash. And each person in line, including you, gets $1,440. By the way, every 24 hours has 1,440 minutes. And so you, like everybody else in the line, get $1,440. Because you get, like everybody else, 1,440 minutes every day. Here's the question. What will you do with your 1,440? Because this is exactly what Paul is saying. He's saying, own your time. You've got to make the most of it. And you've got to invest it and use it intentionally. And so, for a few minutes right now, I want to talk about three ways we waste our time in this era, and then three ideas to invest our time in this era. Of course, I get it. We all know there are hundreds of ways we can waste time and hundreds of ways we can invest time. And I know you know a lot of them, so I'm not going to talk about video games, Netflix, Amazon Prime, Oreo cookies, barbecue chips, and so on. Okay? Instead, I want to talk about a few things that I'm not hearing people talk about or pay attention to. But we would be so wise if we would. So, here we go. Three ways we waste our time, and then three ideas to invest our time. First way we waste our time. Number one, we complain. Now, a few minutes complaining to the right person at the right time in the right way for the right reason, that may help us identify a challenge we need to address. But I'm just saying, as a practical matter, spending too many of our 1,440 minutes complaining is just not productive. Because what you water grows, what you fertilize bears fruit. And when you complain, what you often do is you feed and grow your problems. Contrary to what some complainers think they're doing. I'm evaluating. I'm analyzing. I'm considering. I'm just articulating. I'm defining. I'm purging. Well, no, you're not. I shared with some of you, I think, the blog post I came across some time ago where the writer told the story of a construction worker who was hired to a new crew. And every day for lunch, he'd open up his lunch pail and unwrap his sandwich and say, tuna fish again. I hate tuna fish. Can't stand it. So finally, after a few days, all the crew around him who heard this complaining day after day spoke up and said, dude, why are you doing this every day? Tell your wife that you want something different for lunch. And he said in response, what do you mean, tell my wife? That's so sexist of you. I fix my own lunch. Because we make our own lunch, friends. And often what we complain about is what we've made. I love what Maya Angelou famously said. Quote, if you don't like something, change it. And if you can't change it, change your attitude. Because your 1,440 minutes are too valuable. So instead of embracing the complaint, do what the apostles did. Delegate the complaint. Yep. Delegate your complaint. To who? Well, I'd recommend God. Give your complaints to God. He can handle them. As 1 Peter 5:7 advises us, cast all your cares on him because he cares for you. Don't waste your invaluable minutes complaining. Second, the second way we waste time is by not getting enough sleep. Now, this is counterintuitive, so listen, because sometimes we try to buy extra time by getting less sleep. But in reality, this strategy will cost you time because the next day you're tired mentally and physically, and you end up making mistakes you wouldn't have made if you had gotten proper rest. So the time you thought you were saving by not sleeping, you end up wasting the next day. Some of you will know that in the last 30 years in the scientific world, there has been an intensified effort to understand high performance. Famously, Anders Ericsson led a group of scientists who carried out a study at an academy for elite musicians in West Berlin. And out of it came the famous 10,000-hour rule, made even more famous by Malcolm Gladwell in his book Outliers. And what they found was, in study after study after study of composers, musicians, athletes, authors, chess players, even criminals, what they found was that the highest correlated item that distinguished the elite performers from the less elite was how many hours they were engaged in focused practice on that skill or craft. Magic number, 10,000 hours. But, do you know what the number two item that distinguishes the top performers from the average ones? It's numbers of hours of sleep. The average number of hours of sleep in a 24-hour period of the highest performers was 8.5 hours. And they didn't just sleep more at night, they actually took more naps too. And I'm saying all this just to say to you that we actually waste time when we don't get enough sleep. So instead of embracing less sleep, will you delegate away less important tasks so you can sleep more? Number three, the third way we waste time is we don't deal with problems when they're small. And so we're forced to deal with them when they're like big and time consuming. You know that proverb, a stitch in time saves nine? It's from the sewing world. The stitch in time is simply the sewing up of a small hole in a piece of material, saving the need for more stitching at a later date when the hole has become larger and requires 9 stitches. Now, I know you understand this because a stitch in the nick of time is why you roll up your car windows when it starts to rain. A stitch in time is why you take a few seconds to take off your shoes in the garage or by the front door after playing outside or working outside, so you don't have to devote way more time cleaning the dirt that you've tracked all over your house. A stitch in time is why you rinse your dishes off right away after eating, because it takes 10 seconds right after you eat, but 3 or 4 times as long after the food has dried and crusted on the plate. It's part of the value in flossing your teeth 60 seconds a day. So later we don't deal with a toothache for weeks and then take time off work to see a dentist and then spend a ton of money on a filling, crown, or root canal. And the question for you and me is, what do you need to spend minutes on today so you don't have to waste hours tomorrow? Does it involve a follow-up email, a kind word, a short walk, dealing with a habit, responding to a small problem? Because what I love about Acts chapter 6 is when the apostles identify a problem, they don't defer it or ignore it or put it on the agenda for our next quarterly review. They don't wait till it's a huge problem. Instead, they address it immediately. They solve problems while they are small, and they leverage all kinds of time. Okay. Now, three ideas to invest our time. Number one, plan your day. Plan. Plan it. Plan. Proverbs chapter 31 talks about the attributes of a wise woman. And in verse 16, it says that a wise woman considers a new field before she buys it. She expands prudently and does not neglect her present duties by assuming other duties. And, listen to this, with her savings of time and strength, she plants fruitful vines in her vineyard. In other words, she plans. She plans ahead. She uses her Google Calendar, her sticky notes, the back of her napkin, her refrigerator magnet. She thinks through her day before it starts, so she doesn't get to the end of the day, and then the whole day just sort of went by in a blur, and she's not sure what she did. Can you relate? And here's the deal. When you take the time to plan your tomorrow, hour by hour, the night before, that investment of time will give you a great return. It'll save you time tomorrow and give you minutes and hours of productivity and purpose and results you would not have otherwise had. So schedule everything. Schedule habits, schedule conversations, schedule beauty, schedule entertainment, schedule projects. And if at the end of your day things didn't go well, don't blame your distractions. Blame your schedule. So invest your time by planning your day. Number two, the second idea for investing your time is become an expert in something. Become an expert in something because you've got more discretionary time right now. And some of you know exactly how this works because you are an expert in Tiger King or Ozark. Or in the psychology and sociology of Fortnite's impact on children. I'm saying you actually have time to become an expert in something right now. Think about it. This is like week 5 of this stay-at-home era. So imagine if you just read one book a week. 5 books on any topic. I guarantee you know more about that subject than 99% of people. So pick a topic and read everything you can about it through books and online and talk to people about it and experiment with what it means to leverage that knowledge. Become an expert in something. I'm saying if there's something you're not qualified for, now really is the time to pursue it. Learn how to write the perfect resume. Learn to grow a rose bush or plant a garden. Learn how to grow in patience. I have a friend who told me they're learning to write code in another computer language. I have another friend who says, they are brushing up on a foreign language with this extra discretionary time. You can become an expert in solitude. And I'm not trying to be silly. You know, if you read the Gospels, you learn that Jesus regularly engaged in solitude. He went into solitude over and over and over again. And actually, if you know your history, some of the greatest difference makers had a reputation for leveraging solitude because it's central to character formation. So, second idea for investing your time is become an expert in something. And I promise when you do, you'll get a good return on your investment. It'll give you more back than you deposit in it. Third idea for investing your time is this. Serve someone else. Serve someone else. Timothy Keller, the author, pastor, theologian, in his book on Jonah, the prodigal prophet, he writes that he has seen it over and over and over again in his career. Quote, "The first step in coming to one's senses is when we finally start thinking of somebody, anybody, other than ourselves." Like if you want to get a hold of your discouragement, encourage somebody else. If you want to feel less alone, pray for or with somebody else. If you're worried about your money, set aside some to give to somebody else. Because when you give during a time when it's harder to give, the boomerang rewards are even greater. I'll be honest with you, this is why I'm giving extra these days to North Fulton Community Charities and to Charity Water and to our church. Because when you take some of your $1,440 and you invest it in other people, you will get enormously good return on your investment. Please, new community, tell me you're investing more in others right now, not less. Don't look back on the coronavirus era as the era where the virus forced you to think more about yourself than others. In his book, The Third Door, Alex Bandian meets and interviews Qi Lu, spelled Q-I-L-U. At age 27, Lu was making $7 a month in Shanghai, China. And 20 years later, he was president of online services at Microsoft, and he now owns his own startup firm. And in the book, Bandian interviews him and talks about how Lu told him that the revolution in his life happened when he began to rethink time. Lu said he came to understand, as a 27-year-old making $7 a month, he came to understand, quote, "In some ways, you can say God is fair to everybody because we've all been given 1,440 minutes each day." The question is, Lou writes, will you use God's gift the best you possibly can? And that's my challenge and prayer for us today, that we would, in the words of the Apostle Paul, live purposely and carefully, not as the unwise and witless, but as wise, sensible, intelligent people, making the very, very most of our time.